Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of January, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And remember, it's never the red wire. A glitch in the search software in Apple's OS X Yosemite can expose private details of Apple Mail users, revealing their IP address as well as other system details to spammers, phishers, and online tracking companies. The potential privacy risk appears when people use the Spotlight search feature, which also indexes emails received from the Apple Mail email client. When searching a Mac, Spotlight shows previews of mails. And when it does this, it automatically loads external images linked in HTML email. The Spotlight preview loads those files even when users have switched off the load remote content and messages option in the Mail app, a feature often disabled to prevent mail senders from knowing if an email has arrived and if it has been opened. What's more, Spotlight also loads those files when it shows previews of unopened emails that landed directly in the junk folder. Opening external files can reveal private data to email senders. Senders often include so-called tracking pixels, usually a link to a one-pixel square GIF file in their email, which sends information back to the sender when an email is opened and the external image is loaded. Those pixels are often used by email marketers to gather data. The potential privacy issue was first reported by German tech news site Heise, which I've probably mispronounced horribly, and has been replicated by the IDG news service by sending several emails with tracking pixels to a mail address linked to Apple Mail. A preview of the unopened emails was shown by Spotlight, which revealed to the operator of the server hosting the pixels the receiver's IP address, current OS version, and some details about the browser used, as well as the version of Quick Look, a program that lets users preview a document. An IP address can reveal someone's location, although this is not always very accurate. Meanwhile, knowing all those other details about a user system could potentially be interesting information for hackers. At the moment, the only way to work around the issue seems to be to uncheck the mail and messages box for Spotlight and system preferences. When this option is disabled, no mails are returned in Spotlight search results, and thus no preview is shown. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Spotlight exposes Apple users' private data. And your choices are outrageous. I'm dumping my Apple hardware in stock. And really? I'll disable it. Accidents happen. And who the what now? And, of course, at the moment we have 26 votes. And who the what now is ridiculously far ahead. But I know you'll have more to say, and four of your fellow listeners have already said it. So if you want, you can go to the forum. Scroll down the right-hand side. Under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. And if you go into the forums, you'll see a bunch of those. One of them is the poll discussion. And you open that up. And 10/15, Spotlight exposes Apple users' private data is where you want to put that information. Also, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. So, a little glitch in Spotlight is causing a problem.
We've been telling people for years to turn off HTML mail previews because that's how the spammers find you. But so many people use HTML mail that it's frustrating. And so now that's the default. And so Spotlight is previewing HTML for you.
Right, right. And Apple will fix it. And right now it's just stuff happens and they'll fix it. It's not that big a deal, but it is something to be aware of right now.
Yeah,
and you should disable it in the system preferences. and that'll make life easier for everybody. All right, to the phones. Dun, da, 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 da. Our first caller is Larry. I'm just in one of those moods. I think it has to do with green light. I'll talk about that later. our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. My theory is call early and call often.
That's the way to do it.
I have a question. This week, my Mac went through its normal virus check. I have Norton Antivirus Suite. And I got a message that popped up that said that they had found a worm, and that the worm was possibly in quarantine. So I ran antivirus check once again for the whole system, and it came back and said that no viruses are detected. So I guess what I want to know is, first of all, three questions. What does it mean when they said the virus is possibly in quarantine? The second one is, can the virus or worm actually be deleted? And then the third question is, you know, is this thing lurking around someplace when my machine goes through its weekly backup?
Okay, first is quarantine. What happens is when an antivirus program, depending on the antivirus program, you can set up an antivirus program to delete any problems, place them in quarantine, or just ignore them. If you place them in quarantine, what it tries to do is move that file to a folder that is protected, locked, etc. And the reason it will say possibly in quarantine is because it depends on what the virus is. If it's infected a system file, then it cannot move that into quarantine without destroying your computer, right? Because you can't boot anymore.
Right.
So that's the idea behind that. If it's a regular worm and a regular file and not connected to anything major, it gets moved into quarantine, and then an AV check will not check the quarantine folder because it already knows there's viruses in there. Otherwise, you might have 10 or 12 or 40 of them in there and start getting massive hits all the time.
Okay.
So when you reran AV and it says there are no problems, what that means is that it is indeed in the quarantine folder, and you're good to go for there.
You should be able to open that quarantine folder in Norton to see what's in there and decide if you really want to delete it. Sometimes a virus or a worm will attach itself to a Word file. And in that case, you may want the file, you just don't want the virus part of it.
Right.
Okay. And so you don't want to just delete it immediately. You need to clear the virus out of that file and then keep that file.
Okay. Okay, I'm listening.
And I forget what the third question was.
And secondly is, when I go through my once a week backup, am I backing up that worm or whatever it is to my backup drive?
I would look in your backup drive and see if there's a quarantine folder.
And if it was in your computer before it was quarantined, then it probably is in your backup too.
Yep.
So I would tell your Norton AV to scan the backup drive too.
Oh, you can do that.
Sure.
I would default guess that it defaults to scanning every drive, every connected drive. Are you backing up to a local drive or a network drive?
Local drive.
So I would guess that it would connect to that.
Yeah, it theoretically would. Yes. And how often do you back up?
Once a week.
Hmm.
Not enough.
No. If you don't do a lot of, if you don't make a lot of changes,
don't mind losing a week's worth of data.
Right.
Why'd you put it like that?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean,
I'm not doing massive amounts of stuff on my PC, but I do make changes to files, you know, as I go through the week for Little League and things like that, and so I'd always want to be as up to date as possible.
Yep.
Look,
there are backup programs that will back up a file you change immediately.
Mm-hmm.
There are those that will let you set your backup. I personally back up every morning at 3 a.m.
Oh.
And that way, you know, at most, I will lose a day's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the Time Machine backup program that comes built into the Mac defaults to every hour.
Right.
which has got two sides. Well, it's so you don't lose more than an hour's worth of work, but then on the other side, you probably didn't do much in an hour, mm-hmm. so the backup is really, really, really fast.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess what I need to do is dig into Norton a little bit more and find out how to open these, you know, first where they are and how to open them up, because I'm going to have to educate myself. I don't really know how to do that, so I'll have to figure that out.
There should be something right in the Norton main window about to show the quarantine folder.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to open that up and see. I certainly don't have it opened up right. Which one? I have Norton Firewall Identity, Internet Security, Live Update, and Antivirus. I'm presuming I should go to Norton Antivirus.
Yes, that should be where your virus quarantine list is. Yeah.
Okay, and then start poking around there. I'm looking at this thing. It says Quick Scan, System Scan, and File Scan. But it's not telling me that it has much else open. Edit antivirus. Status. View history. Maybe that will tell me something.
Well, I believe they're kept in library application support. Library application support.
That's the place they are on the disk, but there should be a spot in the Norton program to view them.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to find it. I don't want to hold you up all day online.
Perfect.
I'm going to have to, but I'll have to look around here and kind of figure out how I need to do this. I'm not seeing it immediately.
You'll find it. It's in there. You might want to take a look through all of the menus.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you, guys.
Good luck.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
I use Sophos antivirus, and I get virus warnings almost every day, coming from email.
Yep.
And it's surprising that the email providers still don't do full antivirus scans before they pass the mail along.
Some do. Google does.
Yeah, I'm betting it all comes from a local provider.
That's very possible.
So there's this catch-22. I remember back in the early days, AOL would censor certain words and prevent inflammatory or derogatory words from going past. And then somebody sued them for blocking their mail. They worked in a medical type company, and there are some medical words that you want to go past.
Well, the big one for them was they blocked the word breast,
yep.
mm-hmm.
which meant the Breast Cancer Survivors Forum
yep.
couldn't talk to each other. Oops.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good. So there's always a catch-22 yeah. of those things.
There was some anti-Semitic messages that were allowed to go through, and they got sued by Jewish organizations, and then there were messages that were blocked, and they got sued for blocking messages. You can't win.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yep.
You know,
and that's why
what you
want to be is like, you want to just be the carrier. You want to be the phone company. The phone company, if somebody calls you up and swears at you or breathes heavily or makes sexual suggestions, A, it's probably me, but B, that's not the phone company's fault. You can't
right.
yeah.
sue the phone company for that. That's not their business. They're not in the business of censoring the calls,
right.
just moving them on. That's been law for a very long time.
Yeah, but AOL
I remember the days of party lines and some of the language you'd hear.
Oh, man.
Oh, hello.
Oh, yes. You kids today, you whippersnappers.
Yeah, as a kid, I got quite an education.
Yes, yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Just briefly, because we're coming up on a break, though. For those that don't remember, and there's quite a few out there, but back in the day, Nick and I can remember it. Steve probably can't. But there used to be this thing called a party line. You just couldn't pick up the phone and just dial. You'd have to pick up the phone and see if anybody else was on it. Because within your neighborhood, that neighborhood, say for a block or so, could have 10, 12 people sharing that line.
You had to pay a whole lot of extra money to
yep.
get a private line.
And yep. you'd pick up the phone, you'd hear somebody else, you know, oh, somebody picked up. You'd ask very, you know, I was always taught politely, are you going to be very long? And I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, and I got some ladies that would...
Nah, only an hour or two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are giving the whole life story, and it's like, okay, I just got to make a quick call. Well, when we're done, you know, so you had to share it. So yep. It's come a long way.
Well, it's completely reversed because now you pay extra to get three-way calling.
That's right. We had a lady in our neighborhood who would pick up the line all day long and tell us that we had to get off because she had to call her daughter. I knew her. She lived with her daughter. This poor lady was old and not entirely all there, but it was an interesting thing. Look, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. It's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Nick did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Nick. What's up? Nick? Nick, are you there?
Checking the buttons to making sure.
We don't seem to have Nick.
Nick?
Hello, Nick? Nick calling Nick. Mark calling Orson.
What can we do for you today, Nick?
Well, I was kind of wondering. Well, while he's doing that, I will talk about how excited I am about green lights. Still coming to my neighborhood. Don't have it yet. Don't have it yet. But they were digging in my front yard this week, actually next door neighbor's front yard. That was lovely. They were there for a day or two. And then they went, and then I got an email that said that they were in the... No. They answered... I put something on Facebook, and they responded saying that they had one more street to do, put in some underground conduit.
So they can bypass your house?
So they can bypass my house. They're right next door. I will run over and put in a tap. I caught networking. I can do this. And then once the conduit is run, they'll throw some cable through it, some fiber through it.
Yeah, you're probably good with 8-pair. How are you with fiber?
Fiber, not eight, so good. And I'll be honest with you, not so good.
8-pair is different.
Fiber is a whole other
thing.
You don't just tap into fiber. It's not that easy, and I know that. I do know that.
I would just have to harass you because you know they're going to prolong this. They're getting good mileage out of it right now.
Yeah, they're actually talking about there's a couple other neighborhoods that they're planning to light up, and that's I'm very excited for those folks too. But finish me first, will you? All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Nick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Nick. What's up?
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. I have a Toshiba laptop I bought a couple years ago, 64-bit home premium. And I also have a HP printer that was that I've had since 2009. And I'm trying to install it on the laptop. And I get an error saying that the operating system is not supported. I guess on the disk it says for Windows XP and Vista.
Yeah, you should almost never use the disk that comes with a device. You should always go to that company's website and download the latest driver.
Okay, so you go to HP.
Right, and they have a button for drivers, and then you type in the model number of the printer, and then it will ask you what system version you're running and let you download the driver for that. How old is the printer if it's got an XP disk?
It's about six years old, 2009.
There's a possibility that there is no driver for the later operating systems, Windows 7, Windows 8. Some companies don't make the drivers for the newer machines, sometimes because the driver's built into Windows. If you just stick the USB cable into the computer, it may load the driver for you. But sometimes there just are no drivers, and it's very difficult to get it to work. You can sometimes work your way through the GoScript drivers, but that's tedious and difficult to do.
So there's a possibility that I may not even be able to use this printer on this laptop then?
There's a possibility, yes. Another workaround might be to put the printer on a different computer and share it to your network, and then the driver maybe in that other computer. And I might be able to share it for you.
Okay.
What is the printer, by the way?
It's an HP PhotoSmart, the 4400 series.
That's a pretty common one.
Yeah.
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 What version of Windows are you hooking it up to again? I'm sorry?
7.
Okay, yeah, that should
get it. Yeah, they have drivers for the C4435, the C4440,
the C4400 series, yeah.
Yes, yeah, C4472.
Which specific 4400 does it say on the printer?
I'm sorry, repeat that?
Which specific 4400 model does it say on the printer itself?
Let me take a quick look here.
Because it's different for each of the possibly in the 4400 series.
4480.
Okay, there is a driver for the 4480. Windows 7 32-bit, Windows 7 64-bit.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Make sure you get the right driver. You could have the driver for 32-bit, and if you're doing 64...
Yeah, you'll want to scroll down because there is a specific driver for Microsoft Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit.
Right, okay. Okay, and that's right at the HP website then?
Mm-hmm. At the HP website, across the top, you'll see a menu, and one of the choices is support. Hover over that, it'll drop down, and the first thing it'll say is download drivers.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And then you put in your model.
Put in the full name, so you know.
If you just put in PhotoSmart 4400, it'll give you all the choices, and then you pick the one, the 4480.
Mm-hmm.
And then you
gotta
pick your operating system.
Right, operating system.
Make sure you get the exact one, and then you're on your way.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And this is generally true of any device you plug into the computer, Mac or Windows. Don't almost never use the disk it comes with. In fact, we're seeing a lot of them don't come with disks anymore.
Right.
Because it's better to download the latest version from the website. And we're also seeing that in the more modern OSs, Windows 7 and 8, Mac OS 10.9 and 10.10, oftentimes you just plug the USB cable in and it goes out and finds the right driver for you.
Right.
So it makes it a little easier for you. But people that are used to sticking disks in and loading from disk, you put that disk in and now you're loading an 8-year-old driver into your, new OS, and that can cause other problems.
Right. Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's up?
A question that may be related to one of your earlier calls. I switched over to Avast recently from AVG, and it's been running okay, but I get... after it scans, I get a message saying some files could not be scanned, and they're related, I think, to... I also run CrashPlan, and the files, all of them are related to being in CrashPlan in their cache subdirectory.
Right.
And is there any issue with just letting those messages go by and not acting on them?
It's probably okay. I see the same issue with antivirus scans on the Adobe Flash installers. The files are encrypted by CrashPlan before they're sent out over the internet, and the antivirus program can't look inside of encrypted files because they're encrypted, so no one can see them.
Right, and because it's running in an automated fashion, you can't put in a password,
right,
even if you know it.
So we half wonder why virus writers don't do that, encrypt their viruses. Well, that's CryptoLocker.
yeah, but that's the thing. These are there may indeed, as we said to Larry earlier, it may be that you're backing up a virus, depending on how often you back up your files.
Yeah.
But in terms of those particular error messages, they just mean it can't look inside an encrypted file.
Okay. Is there some way to turn off this pop-up that keeps coming up?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because you want it to tell you about problems.
Sure.
There might be a button that says ignore this problem, but you definitely want it to tell you about other problems.
You may be able to go into the AVG program if you...
This is Avast now.
Or Avast, and tell it to ignore that particular directory.
Right. I see.
Right, and then you won't see the error message anymore because it won't check that directory at all. That's semi-dangerous. Personally, I'd live with the...
Just live with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we get a lot of error messages that annoy us, but error messages are often a very good thing. So unless you absolutely know you don't ever need to see that error message, see the error message.
Yep. And going back to Larry's question earlier, I finally found the GUI version in Symantec Antivirus for Mac to view your quarantine file to let you restore a file that you need, but you can view them and delete them there as well. It's hiding in there. It's Advanced Activity History Protection Quarantine.
And he will put that
I'll put that up there, yeah.
up on our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you.
And again, the note I found is on restoring an item, but there's an actions menu, and in the actions menu, there should be restore and a delete.
Right.
So usually you want to delete the viruses, but if it's a virus that attached itself to a good Word file, then you probably just want to delete it. And as I mentioned earlier, I get a lot of viruses in infected Word files through email, and I just delete them all.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Peter from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Peter. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Fine, thank you. I have a sort of series of questions. My laptop croaked on me yesterday, and I'm looking into replacing it. And I'm sort of debating between getting a laptop to replace it or getting a desktop with a tablet. But I've sort of been out of the tech loop for a while. I used to be very involved, and so I don't really have a great grasp of what's on the market right now. And I was wondering if you could sort of help talk me through it a little bit.
All right. There's a couple of things. First, you can now – do you do a lot of wandering around with your computer?
Not a tremendous amount, but some.
And when you are wandering around, are you creating content or consuming content?
A little bit of both, but it's not real dramatic creation. It's your standard productivity stuff, email, internet, stuff like that.
Okay. Certainly a desktop with a tablet is going to cost pretty much the same as a laptop, depending on what tablet you buy, et cetera, right?
But then you get two devices.
Then you have two devices. Yeah. The big thing about tablets is that many people don't find it easy to create content on them. To type or whatever, they will often buy an additional keyboard specifically designed for that tablet.
Right.
Because typing on the screen with the on-screen keyboard is okay for some things, but if you're a fast typist or you do a lot of typing, it gets awfully annoying awfully fast.
And they make some really nice keyboard covers. So it's a folio-style cover with a keyboard built in that basically turns your tablet into a laptop. Right. So then do you look at a tablet with a keyboard or a touchscreen laptop? Because there are places where the touchscreen is really handy to use if you're into especially if you're into like drawings, because then you can use stylus or fingers or whatnot to draw on that touchscreen.
And also,
I think I just described a Surface Pro 3.
I think you just did, or the Lenovo Yoga, or
the Yoga 3, yeah,
Asus, whatever they call it, which is the one I have, by the way.
And the hotly rumored Apple 12-inch MacBook Air.
The hotly rumored, but never
but
seen,
not seen
so far,
yet.
At least,
yep.
Right. I hate to advise somebody because I'm not you. But you need to take a look at your usage pattern.
Right.
If much of what you do with the not sitting at a desk laptop is viewing content, like watching YouTube or a movie or whatever, and just a little bit of typing, then a tablet could well suit your needs. A desktop and a tablet could well suit your needs. The other nice thing about that is in general... the price of a good laptop, you can get an awfully good desktop and a tablet.
Yeah, typically desktops are more powerful and bigger screens than you would find on a laptop. We joke at our office that, you know, the desktop, you know, $1,000, you get a 21-inch desktop or you get a 13-inch laptop.
Yep.
And the desktop is much more powerful, but you need a really long extension cord.
If you're going to wander around with it, and you need
that's why a desktop and a tablet, you get the big screen, the power of a desktop, and the mobility of a tablet.
Or you can go like a Chromebook with a bigger screen that you could tap into.
Well, and that was the other thing. If you're not using the, if you're not specifically thinking of the tablet as a tablet, right? If you're not buying it specifically for certain apps or to do touchscreen stuff, then you might also look at a Chromebook with which to do that wandering around stuff. Now, that's a tablet.
Right.
So it has a keyboard, which makes it easy to do typing
on.
It's a laptop. It's a laptop form, which makes it easy to do typing on because it's got a keyboard. But it generally, unless you spend a lot of money, does not have a touch screen. My suggestion would be the first thing you want to do is start haunting your local computer stores, both the big box stores and the local dealers, and check out all of their offerings, heft the laptops, heft the tablets, see what they feel like, take a look at what deals are available for desktops. Particularly talk to your local vendors for several reasons. We always support our local vendors. We always encourage people to go to their local vendors, keep the money in the community. But also you can often get better deals.
Yeah.
And you have a face to look at if there's an issue.
And for something as personal as a laptop, the keyboard spacing, things like that, it's nice to be able to touch them and feel them and type on them a little bit.
Right. I distracted myself, but you're right. That's where I was originally going.
Yeah, I thought you were.
Thank you. Go look at them, and you can play with them and see what the deal is in terms of that spacing and the feel and things like that.
From the perspective of desktops,
hold on through the commercial. We got to take a quick break. Do not hang up. Stay on the line. We'll be right back with you. Also with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Peter from Pittsburgh, PA. On the line. Okay.
Well, my follow-up to the previous question then, since I'm sort of leaning towards a desktop and tablet, is it still as worth it as it used to be to build your own desktop?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I honestly, if you know what you're doing.
Yes.
That's the key.
Right.
Because you can shop around and get the best price for the parts and build yourself one, you know, heck of a machine.
But the problem is, one of Dave's famous stories is you buy all these great parts and none of them work together.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's not as big a problem as it used to be. In fact, my son wanted a gaming PC for Christmas, and he found this website that lets you custom make PC components. And then there's a button that creates an Amazon shopping cart of all the different components for you. And
nice.
I'm assuming with their referral code. I want to use my referral code.
Right.
But yeah. So it's a nice, it can be a nice project if you like doing that sort of thing.
And there is a website, pcpartpicker.com, where you can type in your various parts and it will give you compatibility checks.
Yeah, I was actually looking through that this morning and it works very well. Well, great. I appreciate the help, guys.
All right. Good luck. And let us know how it works out.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
One advantage of buying a pre-built computer, especially from a local store, is that you've got one contact point. So when you're having trouble with your computer, your motherboard company doesn't send you to the RAM company, which doesn't send you to the video card company, which doesn't send you to the OS company, and it's a big pass
the
buck.
That still happens to your vendor, but it's their problem.
Right. So if you have an HP, then you call HP. Everything in there is from HP, and so it should be known to work together.
But if you are tech savvy enough to do it, you can certainly build your own computer. Given the slight additional cost in general, it's often more cost-effective time-wise to have someone build it for you. But that's, again, your choice if what you want is the fun of doing it. Knock yourself out. Our next caller is Joe from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Hi, guys. Question on computer scams. I'm familiar with the scam where somebody says they're from Microsoft customer support and you've got viruses and yada, yada. However, yesterday, a friend of mine told me that she went on to Amazon's website to get help in registering her Kindle, got the phone number off of Amazon's website, called them, and the person that she talked to there told her that she had the Zeus Trojan virus and that only a Microsoft person can get rid of that, and transferred her to a company called Toller Tech, who wanted to charge her $350 to clean her computer.
Where did she get Amazon's phone number from?
From the Amazon website. She was actually signed into her account.
Because I don't think Amazon has a phone number that the average person can call. Same thing with the other big companies. It's actually hard to find a phone number. What we often see happening is people will do a search for, you know, Amazon or, you know, Google or Microsoft and not realize there's the, there's an ad. And then so you click on the ad thinking you're at Amazon.com, but you're not. So that sounds like that's what may have happened.
No, actually, she said that she typed in Amazon.com into the address bar, and it came up, and she was in her account at Amazon. Mm. And I did some research last night, and this evidently happened to a person calling Comcast and another person calling their telephone company, I believe, in Virginia.
Same thing. I got to be honest with you. I'm looking around the Amazon website. I'm not seeing a phone number anywhere. There may be one. I'm just not seeing it. So although your friend may have thought she was at Amazon.com,
she may have put Amazon.com in the search bar, not the address bar, and it did a search rather than a go-to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not doubting her in the least, but I'm wandering around right now, and I'm not seeing a phone number anywhere.
Okay, well, she was evidently in the Kindle help area. And like I said, this has happened with Comcast and a telephone company that I can find on the internet.
Yeah, we found it.
I'm just wondering how that can happen when you're calling a company when she's in her account and there's a number on there. Is there some way that they can still have the number transferred over?
An unscrupulous representative could have done it.
Yeah, and the other thing is she was transferred, not given a number of Toller Tech, but transferred to them from Amazon.
Okay. I've gone into Kindle Help. You cannot call them. They will email you, they will chat you, or they will phone you. There is no telephone number in Amazon Help that we can find, and I'm in Kindle Help now under my own account. All the contact and all the help. They will call you. You do not call them.
Okay. Well, the other question is, she did let them take control of her computer and supposedly clean the virus out. What should she be doing now?
Cancel her credit card that she used to pay that.
No, they were asking for a check, actually.
Well, that's even worse, because now they have your checking account.
Yeah.
So the bad guys will take your credit card number. If you're really lucky, they just steal that $300. If you're not so lucky, they'll run up your entire credit card balance. If they want a check, then they have your check account.
So if she gave them routing numbers, now they
can empty her checking account. And you may want to call your bank or have her call her bank and activate some additional fraud protection for that account.
Right. Well, she ended up not sending the check.
Mm-hmm. Good.
She was supposed to send them. They were going to send a courier, a FedEx courier, to pick it up today.
Wow.
But
I've seen those scams. We will send a uniformed courier to your house. Yeah, the postman.
Yeah.
Yes, I've been there before.
You're right.
Yeah. The problem is since they had remote access, they could have done anything on her computer. They could have installed stuff. They could have looked at passwords. Mm-hmm. So she would have had to have known what they were doing.
She might want to go into the control panel and under programs and features, do a sort by date and look at the most recent stuff installed on her computer.
Okay.
And, you know, if there's anything, say, with the date on it in the past couple of days and it doesn't look familiar software that she's done, uninstall it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I did finally find a general help phone number for Amazon, but it says right in it, we recommend that we call you. You shouldn't call us.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah. And these bad guys that are doing these sort of scams, we think they are real tech support people, either fired or, you know, on their own time, because they know the talk, they know what to do, they know how to scare you.
But I'm sorry, when they start asking for checking account information, credit card's one thing. There is no way I'm giving my router number and checking account over the phone, or even typing it on a screen, unless it's my bank.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, well.
So, the bad guys rely on the innocence of the average user that in the messages that come up are scary. You know, it's just an ad, like you would see an ad for tires. Well, here's an ad for the virus that you're infected with. Right. And so it scares people into thinking they need to make these phone calls. And we see a lot of people. We've had several of our customers one guy was trying to find help on Gmail. So he Googled the Gmail help instead of going to Google or Gmail. And clicked on an ad for a company that promised Gmail help, and it was the same thing. They took remote access. They charged him $300 to fix his problem, and his problem was that his password wasn't entered into the field. So it's the bad guys are getting smarter and smarter, and scaring the general public into and tricking them into doing this sort of stuff. And it's very hard when you call them to realize that you may not be at where you think you are, because almost every search engine puts ads at the top of the list, and the bad guys take ads and buy keywords. They buy Google help, they buy Microsoft help, they'll buy Kindle help. So when you search for, you know, help on Kindle, you may not actually get to Amazon.
Yeah, I see that.
Yep.
Well, hopefully they didn't do too much to her computer, and she'll be okay.
Yep. Yeah. So that's always the hope. What we have sort of seen is, from most of the stories we've heard, the bad guys aren't being too bad. They just take that initial $300, which is a huge amount of money to ask someone to pay over the phone.
Yeah, take the money and run.
Right, and they don't run up your credit card bill to make it not as obvious to the banks that this is a bad thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Although I had one of my credit cards compromised yesterday. I couldn't pay for a $10 shipping at UPS, so we called the bank. Someone went on an Adirondack ski vacation.
Nice.
They bought a restaurant in Interlaken and the Adirondack ski resorts and two or three sporting goods shops and ran up the credit card bill.
Nice to know you got that kind of credit.
Yeah,
though,
really?
No, it was a $500 card. It's just a stupid little card we have for buying cheap stuff for the office. So we're not sure how they...
Somebody's vacation.
Yeah, we're not sure how these huge charges went through, and my $10 charge was blocked.
Yeah, right.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
Yep. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Yeah, I told you that I got a call from my bank saying, you know, did you just buy two fur coats in Miami? No.
No.
Well,
yeah.
Then we're going to cancel your credit card and come in and get a new one. And blah,
the
blah,
annoying
blah,
thing
blah.
There is that I had all those memorized. I had all the numbers memorized.
So did I, and now my brain won't memorize the new one because I figure, well, it's going to be compromised pretty soon anyway.
The other thing that's really neat, a lot of the parking meters in Rochester now take credit cards.
Yeah.
So you don't have to fiddle with change.
I haven't tried using my phone for any of those.
So do the vending machines now, too.
Yeah. I have to say that Bing seems to be the worst of the search engines for putting ads in. I just went to Bing and did Kindle help. The first six links are companies offering Kindle help.
Yeah.
That take up the entire page. The actual Amazon link is, you have to scroll down to find it, and it's the seventh ad.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
Although at least Amazon did buy an ad for Kindle help.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, but, oh, who does Bing belong to?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Rest my case.
All right, we got a couple of minutes. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Just a quick thing. You guys were talking about drivers for, you know, computer and for printers and loading software from disks and stuff.
Yep.
I've noticed the past couple of years, if I bought a printer or if I bought security software and I put the disk in, it automatically tells you there's more current software than this and it's going to download it.
Yeah, but it has to be a new enough disk for that.
Right. Yeah, so there's like that catch. Said, yeah. It's been like the past couple years.
Yep.
When I bought my Epson printer back in April, I put the disk in, and it automatically downloaded the current drivers.
Right.
That
it,
is nice.
It gives you a starting point and then goes and looks for newer drivers.
Right. It almost like it asks to connect to the Internet is what it actually did.
Yep. Yep.
And so that was convenient. Same thing with my security software. When I put the disk in, it automatically said there was more current software than was on the disk, and it wanted to download it.
Nice.
So that was convenient. So most of the new stuff now that I've noticed that I've tried to do is always ask to go to the Internet.
Good. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the second thing, really quick, I just wanted to tell people, if they're looking for a Bluetooth speaker to connect to their tablet or their smartphone, my wife bought me this $30 Jam Bluetooth speaker for my birthday last month.
Yeah, the Jam Box.
It's just a little round little speaker for $30, and this thing kicks serious butt.
Excellent. Good
bass
good
tip. Phenomenal. It's got pause and volume on it. It's great. It's just a nice little speaker, so I just wanted to put that out there for them.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's a good thing to know. Thank you. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, one of the things that we like is being able to play music, but often enough we find that it's a solitary experience. Unless you share half your headphone with somebody, that's a problem. So, and if it's an earbud, that works, but if it's an actual headphone, not so much. But being able to connect it to an external speaker is a nice thing. All right, listen, we're going to take another little break. You've wasted an hour of your life listening to this nonsense, but we're going to do it again on the other side of this break. And, we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side for a whole nother hour of this nonsense. Stay tuned.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and I think I should mention that at this moment it is 37 degrees Fahrenheit on Mars. However,
warmer there than here.
Exactly. However, back to the phones.
But earlier it was negative 101.
Yeah, on the cold side. Our next caller is Mike from Ocala, Florida. Mike, if you're calling to gloat about the weather, we will hang up.
Well, I'm from Rochester originally, so you know how that goes.
Right, right. So you're down there. What is it like? It was. What's the temperature there for real?
I think about 60 or so.
Right.
You would have laughed a couple days ago. We had our first big cold snap, dropped down to 30 degrees. and the guy on a NOAA weather radio is telling everybody to stay inside, otherwise they're going to get hypothermia if they go out.
Seriously?
Yep.
So right now, Floridians
are
all walking
around. Yeah, you see people in parkas around here when it gets below about 50.
Exactly. So they're walking around right now in heavy jackets, and you're in shirt sleeves.
Yeah. See, everybody has air conditioners, but nobody has heaters.
Right.
Yeah, my parents lived in Inverness for a few years, near Ocala.
A little bit south of us. Well, they have here what they call heat pumps, but what they do mostly is pump money into the electric company's pocket.
So what can we do for you, Mike?
Anyway, I bought your book on Amazon, and I went through it, you know, about the tablet.
About the Chromebook?
Yeah, the Google Chromebook.
Yeah.
And what I have right now is, you know, I have this house and I have another. I might have called you from up Altoona, PA. Right now, I just carry a laptop between here and there. And the laptop's a old Toshiba L505, which is still working.
Yep.
But I guess the question I have for you is, like, if I consider replacing that, if I buy a Chromebook, can I do essentially the same things at home? You know, like stream music to my stereo and hook it to an all-in-one printer and all that over Wi-Fi, which I use with my currently use with the laptop. Because what I got, just the gist of what I got out of your book, it looks like the hardwired inputs and outputs on the Chromebook are kind of limited. Like there's no Ethernet connection, and I'm not sure if there's an HDMI or not. And I think just one USB.
Well, it depends on which model you get. I have a Chromebook in front of me right now, and it's got two USB 3.0s and an HDMI. So it depends on which model you get. But here's the thing. You can print to a local printer if it's new enough and it has Google has something. It's not AirPrint.
Cloud Print.
It has something called Cloud Print, and there are any number of printers that will do cloud printing, but I don't know if your printer will do that.
I currently don't have a printer here, and that's why I was just thinking of buying one, so that probably wouldn't be an issue.
Right. Most of the new wireless printers have Google Cloud Print built in, Apple AirPrint built in, HP's ePrint built in. ePrint's kind of neat. It gives your printer an email address, so you can be anywhere in the world, and you email, and it comes out of the printer at home.
Yep.
Okay, but there is no Ethernet connection, right? So I would have to run Wi-Fi.
Well, if you don't have Wi-Fi now, you'll be able. Many of them also connect via Ethernet.
You can get USB Ether adapters, but are the drivers built in?
There are drivers now for Ethernet adapters for this, for the Chromebook. So that will work as well. But you might just be easier. I mean, particularly if you have something you want to carry around like a Chromebook, it might just be easier to have wireless in the place.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm seeing a lot of laptops not putting Ethernet in anymore because wireless is so ubiquitous.
Right, and they all want them thin and et cetera,
yeah.
So
yeah, look how thick that Ethernet cable is. My computer's got to be twice as thick as yours to fit an Ethernet cable.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But yeah, the Chromebook, here's how you can tell, Mike. What you do is you put the Chrome browser on your laptop and do everything through the Chrome browser.
Yeah, that was going to be a question as well, right?
Right. And if
I can just run the Google Chrome on the existing laptop. Yeah.
Exactly. And then it will work just like a Chromebook. Now, once it's on, you can also connect it to Google Print. You can also connect it to your Google Drive and et cetera, and start taking a look through the list of things that are available as add-ons.
No, and even
that seems to be the big from the gist of what I got out of your book. The big advantage of it is everything's out there in cyberspace. I don't have to worry about a hard drive or an operating system or any of that stuff, right?
That's exactly right. And so far, at least, there are no viruses that will damage it in any way. So,
although you still get the fake ad pop-ups because it's just an ad on a website.
On the other hand, if you're running a Chromebook and you see an ad that says your Windows, call Windows Help.
That doesn't always help. We see that a lot on the Mac. You get a Windows message pops up, and people call all panicking that, you know, it said my computer had a Windows virus.
Regarding your last caller, I've gotten those a number of times. Yep. You always got to look at the URL. I learned that lesson.
Yep.
I laugh because you're right. I get them on my Chromebook, and I just, yeah. Right.
I get them on my iPad.
Yep. But if you put the Chrome browser, which is, of course, free, get yourself a Gmail address, and pretty much your experience on that laptop, as long as you stay in Chrome, will be exactly your experience on a Chromebook.
Uh-huh.
The other nice thing, the really interesting thing to me about a Chromebook is for people who travel, if you damage it or it gets stolen or whatever, you've got no worries because replacing it is inexpensive and all the stuff is online.
So your documents are sort of automatically backed up into Google
there.
Cloud.
They're always there no matter where you are.
When I bought this particular laptop, I turned it on. It asked me for my Gmail account and password. I gave it to it. 2 minutes later, it was fully set up exactly like my old Chromebook with all of my stuff on it in exactly the same way. So if I ever lose it or it gets stolen, I can, again, now, yes, I'm going to be out another couple of $100 if I go buy one, but I'm done, and everything else is still there. Nothing's been stolen. They'd have to have my password, and my password is not short or easy. So the likelihood of them guessing it is going to be low.
Okay, so in other words, I'd never have to worry about backups as well then, right?
Right,
because everything's on. Now, you can still back it up. I mean, I'm a belt and suspenders guy, so I actually back up my Chromebook.
Does Google Drive do versioning?
No, but they have something called Google Takeout.
So you can take it out if you want, yeah.
Right. So you can download anything you've put up there, videos, photos, documents, anything.
Yep.
I like the old name, the Data Liberation Front, but now they're calling it Google Takeout.
Now, one of the advantages of having a backup, in addition to just syncing to the cloud service, you know, Google Drive or Dropbox, is that a backup can contain old versions of your files. So if you accidentally delete a file from your Chromebook, it's deleted from Google and gone.
Right.
But if you have a backup, then you can go back to 3 days ago when it was still there, or go back to 4 days ago when that paragraph you decided you liked after all was still there.
And the other thing that I like about the cloud is, you know, say you don't have your Chromebook with you, but if you've got a smartphone and you got Chrome on it, you can still get at it, still view any document, picture, or anything else, whether, you know, it's through the Chrome or up on the Google Drive. I mean, there's so much flexibility in that, you know, that you're not just tied down, oh, well, it's back at my home computer, and, you know, I'll have to wait until I get there to show you, or, you know, get
it. Well, that's neat. So if you have an Android phone like I do, I can do all that.
You could be...
Or even iOS, because Google has apps for that as well.
Yeah, right. You could be anywheres and still get at it. And for me, that's been handy at times because all of a sudden I wanted to pull up a picture and, oh, wait, yeah, that's back home. But wait a minute, it's out on my Google Drive. So I just go up there, pull it, you know, pulled it up, and, oh, cool.
There is no more at home or at work or at, it's all in, if it's in Google Drive, it's available to you everywhere on dang near any device you own.
Yeah.
My problem is I've tried so many of these drives, and, you know, some of my stuff is on Dropbox, some of it's on Flickr, some of it's on Google, some of it's on Apple.
Right.
That's just an organizational issue.
But
each new one that came out, I had to try.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is that if you move to Google to Google Drive, right? So you can do your word processing, your spreadsheets, everything up there. I also have another book on that, by the way, in the Amazon library. But that's another thing entirely. But what's nice about that is I find that when I take notes at a meeting, I can immediately mail them to everyone as a PDF or as a Word document or, you know, in any one of a half a dozen formats. I can download things in PDFs or Word. I can send things to people in PDF or Word. So although you may think to yourself, well, now I'm on Google Drive, I'm kind of isolated, you can get to anybody, anyway, anytime.
Existing documents in Microsoft Word, would they still be accessible?
One of the things, here's the other cool thing.
Short answer, yes.
The short answer is yes. You can upload stuff to the Google Drive. You can also upload it and convert them to Google format. And here's why you want to do that. You get, I believe it's 15 gigabytes of disk space on Google. But if the documents are in Google's format, they don't count against that 15 gigabytes. So I've got...
And 15 gigs is an awful lot of Word files.
It's an awful lot of Word processing files. I've got literally thousands and thousands of documents up on Google Drive, and I've used, I believe, a gig and a half, and most of that is PDFs. Because the Google documents don't count against it. So when I do write something off Google Drive, which is very rare for me nowadays, I can upload it. And I've set it to automatically convert. So it goes up and I put it in a folder. I can organize it any way I want. And it's now up there in a format that is not counted against my storage. But when I download it, I can say download it as a PDF or download it as a Word document or, you know, a couple of other formats. So it's really nice. And of course, the really lovely thing about that is Google is all about searching. So now I can, you know, when I go to look for a document, I can search for one much faster than I can remember where I put it. There are just a lot of really nice things about Google Drive that I could talk about for hours. But to get back to your original point, put Google Chrome on your laptop and see if you can live in it for a while. And if you can, then you're a good candidate for a Chromebook.
That's good. I was thinking of that, like I say, as a question, so I'll give that a shot. I got one other quick one before we go.
Sure.
I got this old L505 Toshiba, which still works fine other than Wi-Fi cards down. So say if this new mystery software that Microsoft's coming out with, their new operating system, does anybody know whether that'll run on an older laptop? Like this thing has a 2-gig processor and 4 gigs of RAM?
Probably not.
Well, a 2 gigahertz processor with 4 gigs of RAM probably will run it.
It will run it, but whether you... Again, here's the thing. It'll probably run on a lot of machines. I could probably get it to boot up on a lot of machines. Can you tolerate the weight and everything else?
The official specifications for Windows 10 are a 1 gigahertz processor and 1 gig of RAM.
So a 2 gigahertz. So doubling the gigahertz and quadrupling the RAM means you should be okay.
Okay, great. You know, if I do get the Chromebook, why throw out a perfectly good laptop if it still works? That's kind of what I was looking at.
Put Ubuntu on it.
Right. Ubuntu on it. But I think it will work. The big question...
Cheap. That's how I was able to retire here.
Yeah, there you go. But the big thing, of course, is none of us have actually really seen it except for the technical preview, and you can't count that. You know, I mean, that's not optimized yet. It's got a bunch of bloat in it for testing and stuff like that. So you can't count on that as a realistic benchmark as to how the real operating system will run once it's out. All right, we got to take a break, Mike.
Okay, thanks a lot, fellas.
Thanks for calling. Have fun. And we'll be down to visit you shortly. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Roger from Irondequoit, New York on the line. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
Nick, just a couple of things about the Microsoft, fake tech support.
Yeah.
They're also doing it now with Time Warner Cable.
Really?
How can I was you in tell? A French I mean, shop yesterday, and a lady brought in a computer or desktop where she had been contacted by Time Warner Cable for problems, and she turned it over remote. And yeah. Fortunately, she was smart enough not to back up anything on her system after that, so she has a clean backup and just brought in the machine for a reformat to be sure everything is out.
Wow, that's
you know,
good.
I mean, a general rule of thumb is if someone offers to you know, help you with a problem you didn't ask a solution for, run.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just great. While I was listening to the show today, I just got a call from somewhere in Washington State telling me it's urgent for me to call them back to lower my credit card interest rate on a card that I don't have.
Yep.
Nice.
There you go.
Crazy like that. And on the gentleman with the drivers, I just found a program about 2 weeks ago. I've been playing around with it a little bit. It's called Driver Booster 2. It came to me from a very trusted website where they check things thoroughly, and it also gets good reviews on CNET. And what it actually does is searches your machine and your peripherals, checks the drivers, the age of the drivers, and will tell you how old they are, if they need to be updated. And the neat thing with it, too, is it will also check for outdated versions of Java, Adobe Flash, yep, and like that, which are things you really have to have updated if you're going to use them.
I've seen Avast start doing that, too, in their pro plan. It will check your computer for drivers and other software updates.
Yeah, because I'm good with my computer, and I found out that my Windows 8 machine that's just over a year old, the drivers for my Ethernet and wireless were way out of date.
Huh. Yep.
So it's, you know, the one caveat I'll give you is that like any other driver, you can sometimes download a driver that isn't compatible with a device or with your system updates, and you have to pull it back out and put in the old driver. But right, you're going to find that with just about anything, including Microsoft Windows yep updates.
We sometimes recommend wait for the second time the update comes out because they probably fixed all the problems in the first one.
Right. But I found it's great. I've used it on the three machines we have here at home, my desktop that I use for work, my work laptop, and also my wife's laptop. And it just turned up a lot of things, and it saves you the time of having to go to, device manager and manually go through the drivers.
And even their pay version is pretty cheap. It's $23 for three computers for a year.
Right.
So they have a free version and a pay version.
And the one thing you won't get with the free version that you do get with the paid version is the option to roll back the driver through that program. I downloaded a driver that wasn't compatible with my speakers when I downloaded a new audio driver, and I had to go back and do a system restore, you know, to about 20 minutes before that when I had downloaded that driver.
Yep.
Version is quite superior on it, but it's a great way to find those outdated drivers. Those can be a big hole in your security.
Yeah, they're outdated because there was a problem, and so the problem got fixed, and the bad guys rely on the fact that most people don't update all of their software.
Yeah, it's, you know, today with the internet, you've almost got to do like I do when I'm driving. I don't trust anyone. I assume everyone around me is about to do something very stupid at any moment. And I just assume anyone who solicits me for anything is about to scam me.
Yeah, and eventually you're right.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, if you get something from your bank saying you have to check in with them, fine, go to your bank's website on your own.
Yep.
You know, just don't trust them.
Yeah, so it's if someone calls you and offers to fix a problem you didn't know you had, it's probably fake. And then when you are searching for help, make sure you're going to the company that makes the product you're searching for and not an advertisement.
Well, maybe everyone should simply just try to go to Microsoft to get legitimate help with a problem that isn't useless information and see what an exercise in frustration that is. And then think about the odds that these people are actually going to call you trying to help.
All right. Yeah.
Good point.
Excellent point.
There's a phrase of something freezing over first.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then you avoid scams on ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't even trust it then.
Yep, you got it.
Okay, well, guys, thanks for the show. You've helped me so much over the years.
Thank you, Roger.
It's like you told me, I told you a long time ago when I called in, when I first started listening, it was like you guys were speaking Greek. Now you've got me speaking geek. So.
There you go.
Thanks, Roger. We'd love to hear that. Keep listening.
Yep. Always good to hear.
Yeah. There's a program called Stats, Spanning Stats, that's an add-in to Chrome that will tell you how much of your files are whatever. I'm storing 1,500 files in Google Drive, and I'm only taking up 2 gigs of my storage space, and most of that is the pictures.
Yeah.
1.8 gig of it is pictures. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Thomas from Greece, New York. Welcome, Thomas. What's up?
Not much, Nick. I used to work with Jack Greenkey. I'm sure you remember him. We all love Jack. And I actually work in technical support for a unnamed product.
Nice.
And I'm kind of been listening to you guys for the last about an hour now. And, you know, you guys are talking about security software and that. And I actually had a case recently where a person's antivirus would not stop. I'm going to tell him, hey, here's what's going on. And he's just like, yeah, my antivirus just won't shut up. I wish it would shut up. Even though I told them clearly what was going on.
You're right. Infected. That's why it's yelling at you.
Right.
Yeah. It's some form of spyware in both Chrome and IE. And it's like, dude, you know, here's your issue. Here's how you solve it. And he's just kind of like, yeah, sure. But then on the other side, I had another person did the same thing. I'm like, hey, here's your issue. Run this software. And they're like, oh, thank you. And it kind of, you know, goes along with the whole driver thing. It's like people, you know, they install something and they're like, oh, you know, I think it was Driver Wizard or something, Driver Genie.
Yep,
and
there are several
out there,
yeah.
Complete garbage, but, you know, people go and install it, and it's like, you know, it'll be $30 to, you know, get your drivers. And they're putting their credit card numbers in without thinking twice about it. Well, they think twice after, you know, they're getting charged $80, you know, $90 a month for something they didn't buy.
And these people are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a day at this stuff.
And they're giving a bad name to all of us legitimate tech people.
I blame my parents. They brought me up to be a nice, honest human being. I could be making a fortune if it weren't for them.
Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, and with that being said, it's like also, you know, these ads for, I mean, I've had people go to me, hey, have you seen this ad for, like, you know, woman discovers secrets of youth? And I'm like, yeah, it's fake. There's, you know, notices on every website, yeah. And it just so happens, well, it says that it's the person from Rochester. I'm like, yeah, they can look up your IP address. Yeah. They can find out, you know, within a region where you are, and then cater that ad to you. And they just don't get that people do that stuff. They're like, well, it's the internet. Isn't everybody nice? It's like, no, there's everybody's out to get you. Kind of like the caller before. It's like, yeah. I think the same way. When I'm on the internet, you know, if I see something, anything that says this is off, I immediately look and see what is telling me that something's wrong. Is it, you know, is it an actual legitimate place? You know, then you get the websites that, and like back in the day when you had the Windows XP Security Center, the websites that would intentionally design themselves to look just like it, and you couldn't really tell it apart without, you know, knowing, you know, your stuff like we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still running into that problem because people just go, oh, it's the internet. Whatever comes up is what I must want, you know, because, you know, in real life, that's still not how it goes, but they can't discern the threat from the reality.
For the average folks, I almost wish they hadn't let regular people on the internet.
Yeah, right.
The average folks don't know the difference. They're not going to be able to tell. A message pops up and says you're infected. They're going to believe it and call the phone number.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that have gone to me and they're like, yeah, I got this pop. I know people in my whole family that have gone, yeah, I got this pop-up. It said I needed to download this thing, so I downloaded it, and my computer keeps crashing. It's like, you'll get their ad removed. Well, some form of, you know, not necessarily malware, but it claims to do something. It's like, it found 80,000 things, and it's like, if it found 80,000 things, I don't think your computer would even start.
Those ads are terrible. We see a lot of ads for cleaning programs, and you know, it says free download, free download, free download. Well, yeah, the download is free, and then it says you've got 20,000 problems, and for only $50, you can buy the program and fix them.
Yeah, it'll do it in, you know, quick scan.
Any download is free.
Yeah.
To use the program, you got to pay for it, and it's fake and a scam.
I think the worst offense right now, and I saw this like 2 weeks ago on TV, is now there's companies advertising Windows USB stick cleaners that'll clean up your computer.
Nice.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's like, seriously. Like, you know, and what's worse is it's on TV. It's kind of like anything that's on TV. You know, people go, well, it's on TV. It must be real. It must be okay to buy. You know, my computer's running slow. I want my computer and internet to run 100 times faster. And they build up these false, you know, assumptions of what's going to happen. And then when something negative happens, well, it must be someone else's fault, not the product that I went and bought.
Right.
Right. They don't make that correlation between that free thing they downloaded and their computer not working anymore.
Right.
Yep, I have that, you know, like I said, a named company, but we have people, they call in, and it's like, you need to off your antivirus or your firewall. No, that's not possible. It's your product that's causing the problem, not my security. It's like, they might have a network firewall. My IT knows what he's doing. You know, if anything he does, it must be right. And it's, you know, you have to sit there and you kind of explain to them or hope you can get the IT on the line, which sometimes is impossible. You know, they'll sit there, you know, and argue with you for hours. And you have to prove to them beyond a shadow of a reasonable doubt that, yes, your antivirus or security is the issue. You need to resolve it. And by then, you know, they go, well, why didn't you tell me that in the beginning?
Yeah, right.
I've been trying to tell you that for the last hour.
No, we get it.
Yeah.
These are all very good points. Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Thomas.
It's been my pleasure. Take it easy, guys.
Have fun.
And because of all those problems, it's hard to tell the good tech guys from the bad tech guys. And right. the real edge. I often tell people there's two kinds of spam. There's real spam for products that exist and you just don't want to buy, so you don't like it. And then there's fake spam, where the product they're offering is completely fake and they're just trying to steal your information.
Right.
And sometimes those are the best sounding products. Yeah, like you were saying, you know, the miracle weight loss pill. I get that ad 100 times a day, and I wish it was true.
Yeah, right.
and one of these days when it is,
person in line.
Yeah, one of these days when it is true, no one's gonna believe it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, really, they've been fed
somewhere.
It, so.
There is one lonely Nigerian prince trying to give away $1 billion.
Still waiting on that one, huh?
Yeah.
Of course. Nigeria abolished the monarchy back in the... Never mind. Anyway.
Yeah, Prince in Exile, then.
Exactly. He'd be about 140 years old at this point, I think. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. Is there a way to, when I open up Google Chrome, to make it go to my Yahoo homepage? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's in the settings, and there's a setting for open a specific page.
Right. So what you do is you open up Chrome.
Yeah, I did.
And you go to the page you want.
Okay, I'm there.
All right. Now, in the upper right corner, there's those three little bars.
Yep.
That's the menu.
Okay.
And select settings.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Are we there so far?
Yep.
All right. So,
on startup, open a specific page.
Yep.
That's the one.
And click set pages.
Right. And one of the choices should be the current page.
So then you don't have to type the address into the field. You can say use the current page that's open.
Oh, use current page. All right, let me click that. Okay.
Yep.
And it says startup pages. My Yahoo.
Yep, so when you start...
Just click OK?
Yep.
Oh, and that'll do it. Hey, one other thing. On Google Chrome, can you make the list of favorites like they do on Internet Explorer on the left-hand side all lined up?
No.
You can't do that.
I don't think so.
I don't know what... you mean
a bookmark or favorites on Internet Explorer. You could have a list up and down that's always there.
Yeah, a sidebar. Safari does that now, too.
Can you do that on Chrome?
There is a... Chrome by itself does not do it, but there are a couple of add-ins that will do it for you. One called Tidy Sidebar, another one called Simple Bookmarks, another one called Bookmark Side Panel.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know, there's a million of those. And the way you get to those is, again, you pull down that three-bar menu thing.
Uh-huh.
go to more tools and extensions. No, I'm sorry. I completely that's the way to do it. And then down at the bottom of that page, you'll see Get More Extensions. And that takes you to the Chrome Web Store. And if you type sidebar into the test, into the search thing, you'd, you'd find a bunch of them under extensions. Tidy Sidebar is one of them that will do what you want.
Okay, I see them.
There you go.
And just get that free, it says.
You got it. It's free.
Thank you.
Yep. I'm going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave, Steve, Nick, you. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. One, turn your radio down. Two, turn your radio down lower. Three, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. Four, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. Five, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. Six, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And seven, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We are Soundbites. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. A vulnerability in Asus WRT, which is the firmware running on many wireless router models from Asus Tech Corporation, allows attackers to completely compromise the affected devices. Malicious hackers, however, need to launch their attacks from within the local networks served by the vulnerable routers. The flaw is located in a service called InfoServe, server, I-N-F-O-S-V-R, which runs on the Asus-powered routers. By default, the service, which is used by a tool called the Asus Wireless Router Device Discovery Utility, listens to packets sent on the router's LAN interface over UDP broadcast port 9999. Service runs with root privileges, contains an unauthenticated command execution vulnerability. A fellow named Joshua Drake discovered it and published his findings after someone else independently found the same issue and released an exploit for it. While attackers can't exploit this flaw from the internet, they can use it to gain control of routers if they first compromise a device connected to them or if they manage to connect to the local network in some other way. Routers are valuable targets for attackers because they provide a foothold into the network. So until Asus releases firmware updates for the affected routers, be very careful who you let on your network. And when you are out in public, worry about whether or not they're using an Asus router, which could be compromised by pretty much anybody who connects to that router in a public Wi-Fi spot. So do you own an Asus router? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. More and more exploits for more and more things. We're seeing them for everything nowadays. It's getting horrible.
Well, like I say, the viruses are on the downcline, and the spyware and malware is on the incline because you know they can make money on that, and that's what folks have to realize. You know, you get this. You know, you're downloading something, and you got to click on it three or four times because you don't think it worked. Yeah, it did. You're maybe downloading a song illegally or something. You know. And you got infected.
Well, even the legal stuff, people have talked about the CNET wrapper that gets put on a lot of downloads, that you're downloading a legitimate file and it throws in this toolbar and that toolbar. They're technically legitimate programs, but they're annoying, obtrusive. So when you combine annoying and obtrusive, you get obnoying.
Abnoying,
yeah. and they're
something.
Yeah, they're technically legitimate, but they bog down and slow down your computer.
Well,
so read those messages that go by.
And like I told you before, I've seen a couple of computers, people's computers There's so many toolbars on there, you can hardly see any of the content for the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're seeing more and more router exploits where most people have a little wireless router in their house that creates their wireless network and gives them the perception of security against the internet. But a lot of those routers are being infected. And so the Electronic Frontier Foundation is sponsoring an open wireless movement to replace the firmware in your router with an open source firmware that can be vetted and checked for these backdoors. And it works with a lot of different brand routers. Some are better than others, but it's what a lot of people are trying to do to make a better firmware for your router that you know is going to be safe.
Right. Oh, speaking of all of this, I almost forgot to talk about Thunderstrike.
Thunderstrike.
Hmm?
Thunderstrike.
Was that Lionel and?
Yeah. It's a Lionel train. It's the Thunderstrike.
Oh, I was thinking Lionel Thundercat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. He's one of the Thundercats. Thundercats go. No, it's a new malicious virus for Macs.
Yep.
It hides in the Thunderbolt ROM chip.
So there were a couple. There was a paper presented at a conference about the vulnerability of the Thunderbolt chips, and like at the next conference, there's a proof of concept rootkit.
And now you can actually buy online a little device that I could plug into your Thunderbolt, which gives you that virus.
Yep.
So all I need is access to your machine for about 10 seconds. Truly, literally 10 seconds.
Yep.
Plug the thing in.
There you go.
Unplug it, walk away, you don't even know what happened.
Yeah. These have existed in USB sticks for a while, and now this one is Thunderbolt.
Right.
Which is a higher speed interface.
Right, and it's essentially an Uber rootkit.
Yep.
Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no way to get it out that they know of. We replace the chip.
Yeah.
But that it means unsoldering it and...
Yeah, anywhere you have firmware that can be updated. So you may see that a firmware update for your computer, for your printer, for your CD player. Mm-hmm. Anywhere the firmware can be updated by the good guys, it can be updated by the bad guys too.
Yeah.
And the bad guys are finding that out.
Totally trash your machine.
And we talked about rootkits. This is called a boot kit because it happens at boot time before you even get to the operating system. This happens in the boot up ROM. So. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's pretty bad.
And
all you have to do is plug something into the Thunderbolt port.
Right. So yeah, I was gonna say a lot of the Mac computers don't have FireWire built in anymore. It's been replaced by Thunderbolt.
Right.
But FireWire is still part of that Thunderbolt technology, and so that's why they're calling it Thunderstrike, is because it works on the Thunderbolt ports, which is actually an Intel technology. Intel's name for it is Lightpeak. So you may have this Lightpeak technology on your PC as well.
Right. And so those of you who have a Thunderbolt or Lightpeak connector on your machines, you really need to be very careful who you let near your machine. You know,
nobody.
That is the only answer these days. We talk about locking your machine if you walk away for a minute or whatever that's about. But now you have to worry that somebody could come in to your place of business or your home or whatever.
Or think of kids in dorm rooms.
All they need is 10 seconds. Yep. All they need is 10 seconds. Yep.
Yeah, and if you're in a dorm and kids wander around from room to room, talking and gabbing and that, and they leave the doors open, bam, you could sit there and infect quite a few, destroy quite a few.
You take your laptop to a coffee shop or bookstore, and you run up to get a refill, and you're gone for 30 seconds, and someone has infected your machine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it doesn't take long.
Apple is going to put out a partial fix. They have not yet. There's a partial fix, but they cannot fully fix it. Hmm. So even after that's done, if somebody sticks one of those devices in your machine and reboots it, they will own it, and there is no fix for that. There will be a partial fix.
Is there anything to block it?
It seems that it bypasses the admin password, too.
It bypasses everything.
Dang.
Everything. All you truly, literally have to do is take this little device, this little dongle, plug it in, and 10 seconds later,
it's got control of the
pull
machine.
Pull it out, and your machine is owned. It's horrid. It's a horrid thing. Right now, of course... they're calling it a Mac virus because 99.999% of the machines that have a Thunderbolt or Lightpeak are Macs.
And partly because this has been a vulnerability to Windows machines with USB sticks for a long time.
Right.
And it's blasé now. Well, yeah, we know that for Windows. Well, this is new for Mac, and so new makes headlines.
Well, yeah. And more importantly, there are an awful lot of Mac people still to this day who are smug that they can't get viruses, their machines can't be owned. That is, of course, completely untrue, and here's just more proof of it.
We get a lot of people in our stores that want us to take the startup password off their computer. It's not a really good thing to do. It should ask for a password. It's for that time when you want run up to the counter to grab another coffee. You know, it should have a screensaver password. It should have a startup password. Oh, but it's only me at home. Well, sometimes it isn't.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, really, folks, I know we love the thoughts that Macs
the evil maid, the one article is talking about.
The evil maid? Oh, right, the maid. Sure.
It may not be only you at home. You might have a maid.
Right. Or you're at Dave.
The dog walker.
Again, Dave. Dave is absolutely right. Dorm rooms?
Yeah.
Students? Who's more likely to do this to your machine?
Oh, heck yeah.
Than a student?
I knew someone whose son was in college, and his electronics kept disappearing. Turned out his roommate was a drug-dealing thief.
There you go.
And the campus police hauled him away one day.
There you go.
And then all his stuff stopped disappearing.
Hey.
The big thing to take away from this for Mac people is that your machines are equally vulnerable. They need to be protected. You need to think about protecting them, not just electronically, that is to say with antivirus, et cetera, but also with physically, with that sort of thing. So pay attention to your machines, and there's no complacency just because you have a Mac. You cannot be complacent anymore. They're just computers, and computers can be hacked. So you have to be careful. All right. That sound tells me we're done for another week. You wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. Go out and do something real with yourself. But when you do, take a radio with you, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. So if he starts to go off like he sometimes does, we'll just cut him off and you'll hear dead air. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco, and we will be back next week with sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Have a great week.